Hey, welcome to Block Thinking. My name is Van der Poeghert, and yes, rearing to go. Hope things are going well for you over there. And then, as always, a few punts before I start with this week's episode. So this podcast is kind of a doorway into a lot of content that we create. So if you're interested to know a little bit more, number one, if you're interested and excited about all kinds of geekery around design tools, how to make your design process, your design workshops, your design collaboration more interesting, check out my YouTube channel. You'll find it under my name, Van der Poeghert, where I review all kinds of interesting design tools and hopefully inspire you to make not only the things that you create a great experience, but the whole design process an amazing experience in itself. Then a lot of the content that I'm sharing here on Block Thinking is inspired by people that I've interviewed during live streams. You can find links to these live streams, and especially when I'm doing new live streams in the future, at thecreativecoffeebreak.live. This is where I schedule live streams. And also, by the way, if you're interesting, reach out. If you want to talk a little bit about all the geekery that I cover here in Block Thinking, and you have some ideas, thoughts, tools, reach out. Let's have a conversation. Even if we don't do a live stream or record it, I'd love to hear from you. But then also, I'm looking for more guests to join me on the live stream. As you see, I've got some awesome people, and I would love to hear what you're doing. Potentially, we can feature some stuff, or maybe even just challenge us each other, because it's not only about agreeing and high-fiving, it's also about the debate and collaboration. So yeah, with that being said, and all the plugs out the way, this week I'm really excited to bring to you my good friend Kasia Gavlik. Kasia has been on Block Thinking before, and why not have Kasia again? One of the big reasons I also wanted to introduce Kasia, or reintroduce Kasia, is the fact that she is such an awesome, inspiring person that I got to work with here in Poland. And, you know, when we created Block Thinking, it was really about focusing on Central European talent, which kind of fell by the wayside because of pandemic and, you know, the work we do, entrepreneurship, just getting busy. But I wanted to feature someone from Central Europe and talk and catch up with her again. And not only because she's from Central Europe, but because I really respect the work she does. We also kind of reconnected recently, and I started realizing that not only is Kasia this amazing mind when it comes to research. So I usually, when I run into the research research phase of my projects, I reach out to Kasia for inspiration, for input, for advice. You know, I don't by all any means claim that I know everything. I have to rely on some really experienced people to help me through some of my challenges, and Kasia is one of those people. But during our conversation, I also realized that not only is Kasia kind of this kind of research-focused individual, but she has a vast amount of knowledge around customer experience. And even though we wanted to talk a little bit more about research, the next interview started really focusing on customer experience and how we need to develop better experiences. So without further ado, here's Kasia.
She's a dear friend and a colleague. I worked with her for a fair amount of time. And the more I work with her and the more we hang out, the more she gets irritated with my stupid sense of humor. And the more I get to know how awesome she is. She's got a background in marketing, so she's kind of cut her teeth on that space. And I think that's why we also get along, because there's this kind of marketing DNA. And funny enough, I was in a conversation today, during the course of the week, long week, and where an individual was talking about being in a conversation with a whole bunch of CMOs. And one of the key topics that came up in this conversation about the future of marketing is the word experience. And I think we're going to touch a lot on that word. And that's also why my friend Kasia is so important, because not only has she cut her teeth and become a legend in the world of user experience design and service design, specifically focusing on research, but she has really kind of shifted her career into the space of customer experience, and also like building this kind of overarching view and, you know, how to manage it, how to implement it. She's also currently, because she's not going to be on the show for too long because she's got a lot of work to do. She's wrapping up a PhD in management, and she's got about 20 years of experience. And also she's going to be talking soon at the event in Hamburg, one of her favorite places. But I want to read you the topic of this talk. It's about brands. It's pirates, outsiders, and nasty old guys. And then also she sent me this profile that I want to read to you as well. She's a well-assimilated outsider, Hamburg psychophilic. I need to talk to her about what that means. For several years, she has been exploring the secrets of brand strategies, referring to their own products at night, her own products at night, and just finishing her doctorate on this subject. In her free time during the day, she manages projects in the area of service design and product design, as well as customer experience at Deloitte Digital. And I would also be remiss to mention that she's also a mom of two awesome daughters who generate all kinds of interesting stories. But you have to be a close friend of Kasha to know what I'm talking about. So Kasha, super stoked to have you on the show, and thank you for joining me here. I don't know if I've butchered your profile, but if you can take a minute.
For this introduction. And first of all, I love your sense of humor. Then don't sound say such things.
You shake your head and look at me and go like, Vanner. And that's always the best of times.
It's my sense of humor. You don't get my sense of humor. That's very simple. Yeah, cool. Thank you. Thank you for all of this. I'm very proud of writing about myself that I'm a well-assimilated outsider at the conference bio. So thank you for sharing it with the whole world. And everything you said about myself is true. I suppose that we will be talking today mostly about this free time activities, which I do for the normal work day usually.
Yeah, not what you really want to do, but I mean...
Yeah, it's not true. It's not true. I love all the streams of my activities equally.
Yeah,
it's just a puzzle that you have to merge in this very short time of the day.
Exactly. And Kasha, I want to just, you must forgive me. Like, I just want to jump into what we were discussing before, you know, we did this live. And I think I want to start off with kind of just where you put me straight. I mean, initially, I was thinking about how we can discuss in a more deeper level around research and the topic of research. But then also I realized during the course of the week, as we discussed yesterday, that not only have you grown in your career, there's nothing wrong with research, but you've also kind of built this whole perspective around how this plays into customer experience, you know, and how important it is to interact with your customers, understanding what they do. Can you riff a little bit on or talk a little bit about, you know, how you moved from this kind of researchy thing into customer experience and why these two topics relate so close to each other?
I think it's a very logical consequence. So once you design something and you use design for you use research for designing the things that will be important for your users, that will be friendly for your users, that will be usable for them, then you succeed and you launch a product, you launch a solution. And what then? Then you have to manage this solution. Then you have to have an idea on how to develop it, where to go with it, how to improve the interaction with your users, their experience, in fact. So once you start with designing your experience, your user's experience, then you have to manage the user experience. So my understanding is that there are two sides of the same topic. There is no design without managing experience later, and there's no sense, no clue in managing any experience without being ready to redesign it constantly, listening to your customers. You cannot just hear your customers and introduce the solution and think that it will simply last. You have to keep this contact with the people who use your solution constantly in order to change and to be still relevant for them.
Exactly. And the thing is, I mean, and I think this is where this interesting kind of, you know, perspective plays in, is because I think sometimes we just get blinded by where we sit and where we work day to day, right? And when you mentioned this yesterday, and I just want to reiterate it, where there's the kind of the designing of the experience and then the managing of the experiences. I mean, there's bespoke things that happen in the design phase, right? And like you always say to me, Vanner, the research is not a freaking phase. It's kind of ongoing thing. But it becomes even more important management because you can't really manage customer experience without actually kind of looking at how
having the perspective.
Yeah.
From
and
the
that's
customer,
beyond satisfaction,
absolutely.
Right? That's the other thing I wanted to add because like some it's folks more, I know, it's like, yeah, we've got a good satisfaction score. Like, you know, what are we talking about here when you're talking about managing customer experience?
I think that satisfaction is an important word here, which very often means we measure our NPS, Net Promoter Score, and that's
exactly.
It. But it's not all. So first of all, NPS is not the ultimate satisfaction indicator. It's just one of them potentially. You don't always have to ask people about their satisfaction to learn about their experience. It's very good to not ask the people, but observe what they do, how they behave. You probably, when you have the product that is live and interacts with your users, you probably will have a lot of data around it. A lot of data that shows you how do your users interact with you, how do they convert, where do they bounce, what problems they meet. They will probably tell you about it without being asked. They will call you yeah. and tell you what problems they have. They will write the messages. They will write the reviews. So it's really a lot of data that can be utilized for understanding their experience. I love the word experience because the sole word focuses us on the perspective of the other people, of the people you design for. So the experience is something different from your organizational perspective. You as a product owner are at the other side of this experience. So once you want to do anything about experience, you have to change sides, to change view and look with the eyes of your customers, always.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to kind of step into their shoes. The thing is like, I mean, we didn't really like touch on this in the pre-show and like in the notes, but I wonder if you could give a comment on this because, I mean, it's something that I struggle with sometimes is that, you know, when you step into the service design kind of UX world and you think about experience, you think in it in one way. And when you work on the customer experience side, I feel there's a difference between that. Do you agree or are you completely confused what this South African is talking about when it comes to experience?
I would not fully agree because for most of the companies that start to going this on this journey of managing experience, customer experience, they start with solving problems, with fixing problems. So
making it easier, right? Make it like ease of use.
Yeah,
that
and it's not really creative. It's not really creative. It's not really exciting. Let's say it's just okay. We did some design work. We did some inspirational work. Now we have just to make sure that we're fixing problems, that we're doing it the right way. So it's the most approachable way of thinking about customer experience. But customer experience is not about fixing problems. Customer experience needs to be creative. It needs to be innovational. It needs to be inspirational as well, because otherwise we will not win with our competitors, because all gain with customer experience comes with you go beyond being just
exactly
just okay.
And I think it kind of leads on to what Michal just posted in the comments, right? And thanks for your note, Michal. It's like, you know, we spoke about satisfaction, but then, you know, what about pleasure? And I think that's kind of taking that step further to really figure out, you know, how you can surprise and delight customers.
Yeah, it's something on top, and you have to design what you will give on top to your customers. If you're just removing any pains, it's still not customer experience.
And then the other thing, you know, like, you know, you talk about pains, right? And like some of my clients that I work with, like they have a lot of clients or customers that have pains and they let you know about those pains all the time. But then there's also kind of the school of thought that, you know, good customer experience design is not really about or just only focusing on trying to solve the pains of a certain group of customers.
As I said, it's not enough. On one hand, it's not enough. You have to understand what you can, what sort of pleasure or excitement or involvement or surprise you can bring to your clients in order to build their engagement, to raise emotions, because emotions are extremely important in building this attachment. But on the other hand, not necessarily all pain points are equally important. Sometimes it's more, it's a better idea to leave those minor pain points away and focus on these opportunities for really meaningful experience for your customers where this opportunity appears.
It's kind
because
of this-
really happy customers can sometimes also skip these pain points.
And I like how you talk about like the emotional part, because if like you know, if you think about designing meaningful and memorable experiences, emotion needs to be a part of that, right? But then also I think what you're talking about is also the balance between I always think about customer experiences like time well saved and time well spent. And I think sometimes we're so focused on the time well saved that we forget about creating the like Michal said, the pleasure, the time well spent for customers.
I agree absolutely. So what you will remember from any sort of experience, you will remember the good and the bad. You will not remember the things that are indifferent. So only being significantly better than the expectations or significantly worse than the expectations, you really create a sort of experience. But to understand what you really create, to understand what will be the effect of what you deliver, you need to understand what do your customers expect. If you don't exactly know what they expect, you don't know where you are versus these expectations.
And it's like Gerrit just pointed out, just don't worry, don't only focus on pains, focus more on the jobs to be done. Like what are customers trying to achieve, right? What is their goals and their aspirations? Thanks, Gerrit. Sorry, I spoke right over you. You just slap me around like you usually do. But anyway, we were also going to talk a little bit about how you do this, right? Because I think we're kind of getting into the theory of this. I'm trying to twist your arm to tell me more about what happens in your secret box of tricks, right? Because you've just spoken a little bit earlier that managing it, you need to grab all these data points. But there's sometimes like this feeling that, okay, cool, I'm asking customers via a survey, you know, how they feel about things. And of course, you can use social media and social listening, all these other things. But can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you're seeing where there's opportunities to gather more data?
It depends on the purpose and on the phase of job where you are. For now, we're talking about more about customer experience and managing customer experience than looking for this basic inspiration. Right. So for managing the experience around the existing product, I would recommend to look at your business data, at the data that mirrors the behavior of your customers, analytics data, e-commerce data, any data from your contact center, any claims from your customers. Usually it's a lot of information on board that can be utilized. And it's good to think how you can merge these different sources of information, plus the surveys you mentioned, plus social listening, plus maybe some marketing research that's in another stream of work, plus some initial exploratory research that has been done previously when you were designing the basics of the fundamentals of the solution. It's a huge challenge to combine all this knowledge in one picture, but it's worth doing. However, it's my advice would be that it's always good to think about the questions you need to answer with this data. And these questions, because you can ask many different questions and you can find many different answers. And you can really think in it. And to avoid it, it's good to know what you want to do and adjust your research activities, knowledge diving activities to the actions you plan. This will That's be your, like, you know, the
What's your purpose, clear your North direction. Star, your mission? Yeah. That's actually quite interesting.
If you're not ready to utilize the data, if you're not ready to utilize the knowledge, don't waste time for getting it.
That's an interesting comment there, Kasia, because like I'm going to explore that a little bit, because I think sometimes there's this kind of idea that, okay, cool, let's just see where the flow is, like what's happening with the customers at the moment. But actually, if you don't have some kind of focus or purpose or hypothesis at the beginning before you step into this space, you're just going to kind of fall around trying to solve problems that might not be important to your business.
You will lose a lot of time and you will be really disturbed with all the knowledge you have without knowing what you will have to do with it. So I would start first with the hypothesis, with the hypothesis that is on purpose with the actions you want to take. You have to ask questions to yourself. What I need to do? What decisions I have to make? And then, what do I need to make this decision? So wow. I would recommend to start from the end.
Yeah, and then
from defining the decision.
That's interesting. I haven't thought of it like that. Because I always think that there's this magic dashboard and we all just go sit in front of it and then all the answers pop onto it. But you have to actually look through the lens of your organization, not just the data. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Kasia, just from what you've seen on your end taking into account that there's a lot of NDAs on your side of the world, but you know, what are you seeing? Like, you know, is organizations overwhelmed at the moment? Like, are they able to kind of look at solving some of the existing problems, but then also have the ability to look forward? Like I feel like sometimes you get so bogged down to try and solve the smaller things that you're not able to actually look at the future.
It's a challenge. And I think it's different in different industries, in different parts of the world. So traditionally, America is more advanced than Europe in terms of managing customer experience and the organizational maturity here. But when we look at least in Europe at the companies, I think it's a moment of challenge how to transform all the data we can have around our customers into the actionable insights and into the decisions that we were talking about. And I started with the notion that customer experience needs to be inspirational and needs to lead to the innovations. It needs to be about the design as well, not only like maintaining the existing solutions. So if you want to have this inspiration, you really need to use this data very properly. And what we see in many companies at the moment is that innovation is completely separate from the from managing the solution. This is the challenge that I see. Use the data you have, use the constantly collecting data around your existing product to leverage your thinking to the innovations that are rooted in your existing customers, in their existing way of operating, of behaving. Try to find the opportunities that you built by your solutions, by your tools, by your activities with your customers, and not do it completely separately. You don't need to start the new processes. You can have the processes rooted in what you have on board already. That's the challenge.
Yeah, so having something in place is better than having nothing or starting completely from scratch.
Usually, but from the organizational point of view, where we usually still have silos, it's sometimes not that easy. Sometimes it may be easier to start the innovating process from scratch than you know, to leverage from what already exists.
And then, because I'm still trying to get my head around this idea, because we're kind of interchanging the whole innovation part and then the customer experience part as well, right? So the managing of this, what are you seeing, on the management side? Because fundamentally also when you started talking about this kind of data that's coming in and that's coming from all these different places, is there like a silver bullet platform that you can gather all the data together? Or is it kind of like using little bits here and there? Like what kind of people are doing this work at the moment?
For me, it's a part of a digital transformation, which is of course a broad, very broad topic touching many different areas in the companies. But data is a sort of fuel and is a sort of blood in veins of all this system. And the part of the great importance is the IT integration of different sources of data. Without it, you will not be able to see the full view. You will always struggle with having this information here and this information here. And theoretically, we know everything, but it will take us 3 weeks to have the answer to the simple question by merging this data from different sources. So it's really worth thinking about it as an IT challenge as well. There are solutions that help to merge this data, that are solutions that help to transform them into the actionable dashboards. But anyway, it's a matter of integration of different sources of data.
Kasia, this is a bit of a side kind of like, we didn't really discuss this and you might not have a real answer on it, but how do you see marketing kind of playing into this space? Because, I've in the last couple of weeks, I've been working with some teams that use a lot of marketing data, a lot of segmentation, a lot of kind of stuff. And like I mentioned, and this is true that some of the top end CMOs are starting to think about the role of customer experience and experience in the marketing space. And I'm not talking about a marketing campaign experience. Ultimately, it's product experience. Like, have you seen anything on your side kind of crop up from a, marketing starting to kind of leverage some of this customer experience stuff?
First of all, I don't agree that marketing campaigns are something distant from customer experience, because it is a part of customer experience and it's good to think about it as a part of customer experience. All the communication we have with the customers are part of their experience with us, with our company. So marketing activities, also this advertising or other forms of communication are on their journey and are building their experience. So it makes sense to think about it from the experience point of view as well. Yeah, I see a clear...
No, you actually have a great point there, because the reason I brought it up in that way is that sometimes there's this kind of focus, and I'm talking from like an old advertising guy that the marketing campaign is such a great thing, like it's kind of separate from what happens in the actual organization. But if you do it properly, the marketing campaign becomes an extension. It's like a taste, a forebearing of what you'll experience within the organization. Therefore, if you have a great experience in the marketing campaign and then step into the organization and it doesn't hold up, that could be a problem.
I feel that we're quite moved forward from the concept that this mass communication is like advertising campaigns are indifferent to the moments of our life, to the detailed segmentation and so on, because it's a mass communication. Because media are so fragmented today, and in the same time they are very well targeted, and we have a lot of data that helps us to target very precisely when using media, even the mass media. And the concept of targeting to the micro moments, to place the communication to the detail of your life where it can be really meaningful, it's not something totally new. And it's exactly about managing the experience with the tools of the communication. So it's not that easy that you can just, you know, make a TV advert and place it in the most popular program. It's just a part of the story. You still need to manage these micro moments. You still need to be where it is important for your customers with these different forms of communication that are available today.
And Kasia, like, I have to ask, like, have you seen any like funky stuff like artificial intelligence, all these kind of things coming to play into the customer experience space? Because you mean you're talking about this mass amounts of data that needs to be trudged through. Like, there must be something happening in that space.
It is. Of course it is. When we're talking about communication, it's for optimizing campaigns, optimizing the not only marketing campaigns, but also communication, like you know, sending the reminders, notifications, and such things to the customers, because not all of them need the same treatment here. You mentioned segmentation. So segmentation is something that has to be taken into consideration, that we have different types, different profiles, different needs. But also for creating the good experience, it is something that you have to have in your mind constantly. If you want to surprise your customers, if you want to deliver the positive emotions that are, you know, above expectations, you must be aware that it's a never-ending story, because once you surprise your customers, after some times, it won't be a surprise anymore. So you have to think about something else. Yeah. And tools like artificial intelligence help to digest the data and predict the future preferences, predict the future moments of truth where you can act, where you can enter with your surprises, with your meaningful experiences, both in communication and in any other form of interaction.
I think it's super, like, it's such an interesting space, because, I mean, I had a conversation today where we were talking about, and this was more in the design space, right? Not so much in the management of customer experience, but at designing new experiences. And even for me in the design space, it's also repetitive, right? It's not like you design something and then stop and then it's magically solved. But I like where you're going with the idea. And I don't know, and I'm making a statement, so I want you to kind of shut me down if it's not true. But I think sometimes we think that customer experience can be solved with one swell swoop. You know, doing X is going to solve the problem, but it's not. It's an ongoing kind of nurturing of the experience.
It is. It's first, it's logic that I mentioned. So you cannot surprise with the same trick all the time. You have the same audience over time, so to build emotions, to amuse them or attach them to your brand, you have to think of the new nudges. But your audience is also changing, is also evolving. If you know their needs, if you know their focus, if you know their preferences, once it doesn't mean that it will be the same in a year or two, especially now when we are in such a crazy moment in time when everything changes. But many companies observe huge changes in the needs profile of their customers. So it's nothing that you can, well, and the third thing, the market around you changes. Your competitors teach your customers different expectations, different behavioral patterns. You still have to be aware of what's going on. You cannot just settle down on your success here.
Keep on working on it. And then, Kasia, the other thing I wanted to ask you, right? So, I mean, we've now spoken about like big organizations, and I also want to tip my hat to Micha, who keeps on firing off this like with knowledge bombs here in the chat about like what's going on. I just want to like bring that just as a side comment, because I thought this is quite interesting as a kind of wrap. It's like machine learning is about finding patterns. IA may help to find something behind that pattern, but usually we are talking about recognition machines or something. Correct me if I'm wrong, Micha. Yeah. So thanks for that, sir. Keep it coming. But where was I going with this? But the thing is, you know, we're talking about, and usually when I think about you, you go in and you go into the basement of a big organization, you kind of like unplugging wires and fixing things and advising. But like, do you have any recommendations or, you know, thoughts for someone who is starting maybe in a startup or a new business or maybe a small entrepreneur? Like, you know, what can you do from the get-go to kind of, you know, make sure that you are managing the experience rather than trying to be on the back foot and, you know, solve issues as they come in?
I think it's about looking for the inspiration, and inspiration comes from looking at the problem with the different eyes than yours. So in my opinion, it's always worth to find the most surprising customer segment, surprising for you as a manager, and try to understand their perspective. It can be achieved in many different ways. I'm an ethnographer by education, and I believe in this very direct contact with the people, understanding their context, their environment, sitting with them at their real world, talking, seeing how they use our solutions. It always opens your eyes. And when you want to go beyond where you are, you have to find this inspiration. You have to find this new sight on new view of the problem.
Perfect.
And it doesn't have to be big. It has to be challenging in terms of, you know, living your comfort zone, but it doesn't need to be a huge study, like 1,000 people.
Exactly. I think that's kind of the thing that a lot of my entrepreneurial friends, like when we start talking about research, is like, this is going to be hectic. Like it's going to be an army of people. It's going to be too much to manage. But I mean, like dipping your toe in, like you say, having a few conversations, doing some interviews, reaching out to people, doing the basics from the get-go can really get you going quite fast, right?
It's not that easy, because what makes sense is to talk with the people you don't know, with the strangers, with the people who are awkward to you, not with your friends and family, because your friends and family share a huge part of your perspective. And speaking with the people who you don't know, speaking with the people who speak different language, even if it's the same language in terms of the nationality, but it's different in terms of their worldview. It's not easy, but it's really worth doing, because it's a true source of inspiration.
Brilliant.
Even listening to the language the people talk, the notions they use, it can be very surprising.
I think talking about research and startups and that kind of stuff, right? You also, at the beginning of the pandemic, you got yourself busy with something and you know, a little bit of a side project. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then what we just discussed, because you're like people laugh at me when I say it, but it's an actual saying, you eat your own dog food. So you do what you practice what you preach. How did this, I mean, first describe the project a little bit, and then also like what the process you followed to get it to a point where you could hand it over.
So it was a somehow model inspiration, because it was inspiration of observing the people around us and their challenges at the beginning of pandemic. And what I noticed, and it appeared that some people around me have this similar observations, was that there's a new group of people at the market, at the world around us. The new needs appeared. It's a group of people who lost the ability to perform their jobs, their professional activities due to the pandemic, due to the lockdown, because they were involved in the direct contact with the people. They were giving trainings, they were giving lessons, they were leading workshops, all the sorts of activities that were involving the direct contact with the group of the people. And they It was a huge group of people. They were not able to work anymore in the situation that was that we were experiencing, and it was another group of people who were also in the new situation. That was something that has that had to be noticed. It was a group of people. They were families with the kids who were struggling with managing their way of operating within one flat, within one living area, yeah, with parents trying to work remotely, and the kids not having school at the beginning or having it, but for the part of the day, and not having a good idea how to spend the rest of the day. And understanding these two fields of needs, two areas of needs, and merging these two points of view, we came to the idea that those two groups are somehow complementary, because the people who are left without the possibility of performing their activities, in the same time, they are able to give to those poor kids and poor struggling families what they really need. We decided to build a platform that will support both groups. And it sounds easy. It sounds easy to make a marketplace where you can offer your activities and you can send your kids there, and this will work. But it's not that easy. We must have understood what are the exact needs and the barriers at each side. And we ended up with a huge program of supporting the trainers, the workshop givers, and all the people on that side with their challenge to go online. It wasn't that easy. It wasn't that obvious.
And that's a bridge. I forgot about that, because for me, the connection between the two needs makes sense. But then on the one side, the trainers aren't necessarily savvy to go online, right? Or leverage
digital. There were barriers. Yes, yeah. There were clear barriers that had to be identified. We supported them in cooperating within the group of trainers to share the good practices, to learn from each other. So it was much more than just a marketplace. And for the parents, it was also not that obvious, because they were saying, well, it's so many activities available at the moment. My Facebook is like exploding with the offers of someone making origami online and telling the stories and so on. But how do I know what of them is worth my time, and which of them will be something attractive for my kid? How do I know it? And we found out that it's about a system of sort of recommendation that will fit to your kid, that you will be able to set up the focus for your kid. And then we will help you to find the right activities for your kid, not just find the activities. So we went far beyond the idea of a marketplace by understanding both sides.
That's actually,
we did a lot of research for it.
And it wasn't a huge amount, right?
Exactly. It wasn't a huge quantitative study at any point. We just talked to the people a lot. We were inviting the people from different places. We were approaching them by the online groups of interest and inviting the completely strange people for the project, asking about how they feel, how they struggle with the situation. It was a lot of focus groups, a lot of individual interviews, and they were like happening all the time during the whole project.
Yeah.
So it was evolving.
It's like you always say to me, it's not a separate phase, because it sounds like what you're describing is that there was an initial idea of connecting these two groups. And then as you kind of dive deeper into that, you realize that there's additional needs that need to be solved, or problems that need to be solved. And then that evolves the project even more. But in the meantime, the rest of the projects, the work still continues, right? It's not that everything slows down and wait for Kasia to have an interview with someone.
Absolutely. It was evolved. Our way of thinking was evolving along the journey that was coming from one iteration of interaction with the potential users from both groups to the another. So we were evolving in our way of thinking. The whole concept was evolving with the iterations. We went quite a long way from the starting point.
Kasia, and the thing is also, I mean, this is a startup, right? And that you guys have built. But do you think that bigger organizations are going to get to that point, or are they already there to be able to be so reactive to insights?
I think there's no other way, because our tools are getting more and more efficient in delivering us the instant information. So it's always the question who will be faster here. If technology allows us to react quickly, the ones that will be able to adapt to this this rhythmus will win.
Excellent. Kasia, I think we need to start wrapping it up so I can let you off the hook, because I know you had a long week, you're tired, you've got some adventures coming up. But just as a wrap up, right? So one thing that I learned today, or something that I'm taking away, is really like what you mentioned right at the beginning, amongst a lot of other things, is like, think about where you are in the process, or where you find yourself, because designing something and managing something in the customer experience space can be different kind of aspects. But you know, if someone walks away from the stream, like thinking about our conversation, what would you say is one of the key or a few of the key points?
I will develop your thoughts about thinking where you are, at which point of this journey you are, and I would give you three inspirations for three different stages where your audience can possibly find themselves. So when you are looking for the inspiration, when you try to define what you have to do, when you start designing the solution, try to look as broadly as possible. Try to look with as odd perspective as possible, with as different view as possible from the one that you normally have. So it may make sense to invest more in the research in that phase. Even if it seems it's the very beginning, let's play safe at the beginning. If you have to invest more attention into the research, this is the right moment. But then when you already know what you want to achieve and you start iterating with your solution, you don't need to look that broadly. But what you need to do then is to keep constant feedback, constant evaluation with your customers. So it can be a sort of I would call it a junk research. It doesn't necessarily have to be really good research, extensive research. It can be getting out of home, getting out of the office, grabbing a few people, three, four people, taking 10 minutes of their time, checking your solution, but do it frequently, do it regularly. Get this feedback as frequently as you can. Don't do it too frequently. Don't do too much of it, because it will stop you. You don't have to over-research your solution.
Don't lose momentum.
Don't avoid doing it. And when you already have a working solution, make an advantage of all the data you will have around it, because you will have a lot of data already on board. So utilize it as much as possible and try to go beyond just fixing problems. Try to find the insights, try to find the inspirations.
Good stuff. And Kasia, before you go, right, before you go, I have to bring this up. Right. Do you remember this?
I knew that you will do it.
Yes.
Of course, I do remember it. It was a terrible photo, nothing, a wonderful speech we would have to get.
Yeah, we had a good time presenting at World Usability Day back in the day when we were still rolling together. And then I will never forget that someone looked at this photo, because this is like the strangest photo that was ever taken of myself as well, looking at that. And then someone posted in the comments, said like, we do look like the antwoord. And I, gosh, to be honest with you.
I love this comment and I love this photo.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think we are kind of the antwoord of experience design, you know. I mean, I'll lay the claim down there and people can agree or disagree, you know, whatever they think. But I know what the
I'm
truth is.
I'm proud of it.
Exactly.
I'm proud of it. And I want to tell you that I'm really grateful for having this opportunity to become an antwoord with you.
Kasia, I mean, where can people find you? I mean, I know you're not the huge socialite yet, but you have a few channels where people can keep an eye on you, because you're also going to be presenting in Hamburg soon, if I'm not mistaken. So...
It already took place recently, so it's a fresh thing.
I'm very professional.
Things happen very quickly. We don't even notice them.
I also think that you're gonna be live soon in Polish, right? So for the Polish folks watching, you're gonna be doing a live show. I think I saw something go past on one of my feeds. Like, drop a note. Like, where can people catch you again?
I try to keep my LinkedIn profile updated in terms of all valuable content I have at hand. So if you are interested, I invite you to follow my LinkedIn profile. And if anything will be worth sharing, I will share.
Kasia, I want to say thank you to you once again for joining me. It's a huge, huge honor. And I wish you all the best going forward. And hopefully we can... have a nice Polish beer, or I know you're not really on the beer. I know what you drink. Hopefully we can have a drink together soon.
I hope so.